So, we are in Perikhas. We are at Pasuk Dalet. And if we could, I'll mention this is for a Rafua Shlema 4. I have the name. Where do I have the name is the question. It's on some piece of paper. There we go. Shlomo Baruch ben Rivka Chaya. Okay. So, Gideon defeated Midian, and then immediately ran into a problem. This is during the war. Remember that they had their first rout of the Midianite camp. The Midianim are in a panic. They race east to try to get back across the Yarden. Gideon rallies people, possibly the ones he had rejected from the battle in the first place, sitting there on the mountain. It could be others, but he rallies them to go fight and capture or kill the rest of the Midianim. And the tribe of Ephraim says, "Hey, wait a minute," which is not a good thing to say in the middle of a battle. But they say, "Hey, wait a minute, you didn't call us before. You know, how dare you?" And his response is to make nice. He says, "Oh, you guys are great. You guys are just unbelievable." Either he says, "You're inferior soldiers," right? The Olalot, "your inferior soldiers are better than my best soldiers." Or alternatively, "What you're doing at the end of the harvest is better than what I did in the beginning of the harvest." And he's just, you know, as Ralbag noted, he's being a smart guy. He knows that this is the way to be able to pursue the war without delay, and it's going to avoid any further problems. So he says, "I'll swallow my ego." That's Gideon's approach. However, the decline continues, and that's what brings us to Pasuk Dalet. And we'll read the next five psukim here, Dalet through Tes. Vayavo Gideon hayardena. Gideon gets to the Yarden. Overhu Ushlosh Mayos Haish Asheri Ito Aye Fim Varod Fim. Gideon apparently is traveling in formation. He's got his 300 men, right? Remember, he had 300 men to attack the camp in the first place. So Gideon is there with his 300 men ready to cross the Yarden. They are Aye Fim. They are tired Varod Fim, but they are still running, despite being tired. Vayomerlan Sheis Sukkos, and he says to the people of the city of Sukkot, "Tenu na kikros lechem la'am asher baraglai. Give my people some bread. Ki ayefim him, they're exhausted. V'anochi rodef achrei zevach v'tzalmuna malchei Midian, and I'm running after Zevach and Tzalmuna, these kings of Midian." I mentioned them last week when I referred you to the Pasuk in Tehillim where it talks about defeating our enemies like Zevach and Tzalmuna. You know, Raven's Ave. So he says, "Yeah, we're exhausted. Give us some food." Vayomru Sarei Sukkos, and the officers, the nobles of Sukkot, say, "Hachav Zevach v'tzalmuna tabiyadecha." What are they in your hand? Have you beaten them? Ki niten litzvach halachem, that we should give your army bread. Wait, why in the world would we support you until you beat Zevach and Tzalmuna? Then we'll have a conversation. Vayomer Gideon, lachin b'seis Hashem Zevach v'tzalmuna biyadi. So Gideon, perhaps a little more tired than when he dealt with Ephraim, he says, "I'm promising you the following." He says, "When God puts Zevach and Tzalmuna in my hand, you know what I'm going to do? V'dashtias b'sarchem eskotzei hamidbar v'eshabarkanim. I'm going to take thorns and nettles, and I'm going to thrash you with them. I'm going to thresh your flesh with thorns and nettles." Vayal misham Pnuel. So he goes from there to a place called Pnuel. Vayedaber aleihem kazos. And he has the same conversation. He says, "You know, we're exhausted. Could you give us something?" Vayanu ozo anshei Pnuel, kasher anu anshei Sukkos. And he gets the same reaction from the people of Pnuel. Vayomer gam anshei Pnuel, Pnuel leimor, b'shuvi b'shalom, etotas hamigdal hazeh. And he has the same type of reaction to Pnuel. He says, "You should know, after I win, I'm going to come back here and I'm going to demolish your tower." Right, your big reinforcements and defenses, they're gone. So there.
These aren't Jewish towns.
These are Jewish towns.
They are.
Yep.
They just are afraid that he hasn't fully completed
so
the
that's
process,
where we, so, right. So that's where we have to go. Why will they not help? So Ori suggests they're not helping because they're afraid. Right? They're afraid of Midian. Meaning, sure, today Gideon has them on the run, but historically, certainly for the last 7 years, we've been living under the hand of Midian. He beats them now. They come back. We gave support to this fellow Gideon. Boy, are we going to hear it from them. Nothing doing. That's one possible explanation for their reaction. A couple other things, though, that are very interesting here. Who did Gideon address in the beginning here regarding this request from Sukkot?
Just says on Shei Sukkot.
Yeah, who answered him?
It just says the people.
No, it doesn't. Sarei Sukkot. He makes the inquiry of Anshei Sukkot, the people of Sukkot, and the response comes from Sarei Sukkot, the nobles of Sukkot. That's something worth paying attention to. We're going to come back to that. Here's a third question. Let me say it differently. What's the difference between the two punishments that he offers, the one to Sukkot and the one to Penuel?
One involves physical violence on people, and the other is just tearing down a building.
Right. The Sukkot one, right, the first one, is I'm going to thrash you personally. The Penuel one is I'm going to demolish a building. That's interesting. The other piece of it that's also very interesting in all of this is we know these places. Where do we know Sukkot and Penuel from? Yeah.
Yaakov,
correct. Where are they? What is their significance?
The Sukkot is where he comes back from Laban's house.
Close. And you are so close.
And he says to
Esau. So take a look, please, on your sheets. Actually, what I did there was I gave you the reference to the psukim. Sorry, I didn't actually give you the psukim. But I will tell you then. So Sukkot is the place where Yaakov camps after meeting Esav. After the whole showdown, which turns out not to be a showdown, right, with Esav, and then they go their separate ways, it says that Yaakov camps in this place called Sukkot. And then Penuel is the place where Yaakov fights the Malach. Kivisi Elokim Panim El Panim. Completely parenthetically, but interesting to note, we celebrate the Yom Tov of Sukkot. Why? Why do we sit in Sukkot?
Because God kept Jewish people in Sukkot.
Right. Kiba Sukkot, Oshavti es b'nei Yisrael, Botzi osam eretz Mitzrayim. I kept the Jews in Sukkot when I took them out of Mitzrayim. Right? That's the classic explanation. Where in the story of the Jews being in the Midbar are we told that we lived in Sukkot?
Their first station out of Mitzrayim
was a place called Sukkot. Yeah. What do we usually call the place they lived in the Midbar?
An oasis?
No. The Torah's phrase for where they lived. The Torah uses one word, always. No. They're individual homes.
Ohalim.
It's always Ohel. Shubulachem li Ohalechem, Ohel Moshe, Ohel Korach, Ohalada. It's always Ohel. The Torah never uses the word Sukkot to refer to the places where they lived. That's number one. Number two, even the pasuk that says, I had you in Sukkot, doesn't say I had you in Sukkot for 40 years. It says, Botzi eschem eretz Mitzrayim, when I took you out of Mitzrayim. So there is a radical view that suggests that we're not commemorating living in Sukkot all 40 years. We're commemorating that first stop where Hashem put us when we came out of Mitzrayim, like David just said. Yeva Sukkot, Hoshavti es b'nei Yisrael, Bahutzi Osam Eretz Mitzrayim. I had you in this place called Sukkot when you first left Mitzrayim. It's a radical view. I just mentioned it because it's interesting. But the simple view is that what they called an ohel there was a sukkah. The word ohel does not mean tent the way we think of it colloquially. It's not a camping thing. It means a shelter. The shelter was a sukkah. The word tzchach itself means shelter. But going back towards our discussion, Sukkot is the place where Yaakov camps after meeting Esav. Penuel is the place where Yaakov fights with the Malach. Keep this in mind. It's going to matter, but I want to wait until the end of the story to really discuss what the relationship is between that and our story here. Yeah.
Is Sukkot where Yaakov camps or where he builds a place for his animals?
Sukkot is the place where he camps. It says when Mikneh was sa Sukkot, Akein Karashem Makom Sukkot. Right? He built Sukkot for his cattle and therefore he called the place Sukkot. But I think that's where everybody is. Okay. That's my understanding. The Dan Mikra edition, by the way, with Professor Eli Tsur, flips the two stories, meaning the story that we just read with Sukkot and Penuel, and the story with Ephraim that preceded it, because he believes that this conversation with Sukkot and Penuel is east of the Yarden. That's his belief. Not this conversation, the one with Ephraim was east of the Yarden, whereas this one is at the crossing of the Yarden. Sukkot and Penuel are already in Israel. So he flips the conversations. Either way.
Back to Yaakov and Yitzhak Mitzrayim. Do we believe that the name that Yaakov called Sukkot is the place that Israel camped in when they came out of Mitzrayim? Yeah. Like, it just seems so distant. I don't know where Yaakov met Esau when he returned from Laban. So
right, it would seem to be a different place. It would have to be a different place realistically, yes. I would agree with that.
From north?
South. Which one?
I'm saying when Yaakov is returning from Laban.
Right, he's much further north than Egypt, yes.
Yeah.
Correct. So, the pursuit, Gideon is pursuing Midian, right, to defend against future attacks, not to mention, as Rashi does mention in number 3, that it's not as though Midian is toothless. Midian is attacking those who are east of the Yarden. So Gideon says, we have to go after them. They're dangerous. And Sukkot refuses to help. So again, the simple read, and this is Malbim's read, this is Abarbanel's read, is, as Ori said, helping them would be an act of treason against Zevach and Salmuna. But there are two interesting notes on this. Number one, from Ralbag, it's not only that they don't give food, they also don't offer to fight on his side. Right? They're really scared. But Abarbanel and Malbim also note that they change the wording of the request. Take a look at the psukim. What is it that he asks for in pasuk hey? Yeah, for
the
people coming after.
La'am asher baraglai, right? He asked for help on behalf of the am asher baraglai. Because they are tired. And the response is, we're not going to give tzva'acha lechem. We're not going to give your army food. We're not going to give food to the army because we would get in trouble. So Abarbanel and Malbim read this and say, you know, what's really interesting, I brought it for you, might as well take a look at it. Look on the sheet at number 3. Ha'achas Leosam Ayefim. One reason for the request was, you know, my army's tired. Hashem has commanded us that we're supposed to support the needy. People are hungry, you're supposed to give them food. They're suffering. Give them food. Also, they are the army pursuing the enemy to save all Israel. So, you know, we're fighting for you. You should support us. He makes two requests. However, the response from them is only regarding the army part. The response is, if we help you, we're helping Tzva'acha, we're helping your army. And that's why we decline. They don't address the fact that it's also a tzedakah request. So he says, I'm going to beat you with thorns. Professor Eli Tsur in the Dot Mikra suggests that may have been a traditional punishment for people who rebel against their king. Like, that's, you know, that may be why. However, Radak and Abarbanel suggest this was an area of thorns and nettles. And it may be built into the place name. The place is Sukkot. Sichaya, Samachaf Yud Aleph, are thorns. So this could actually be, even though we named Sukkot because Yaakov, you know, built Sukkot there, nonetheless, it could be Sukkot was also for the thorns that were there. But again, Gideon keeps his eye on the ball. And he says, I'm not going to do it now, I'm going to do it later. Right? So Abarbanel says in number 4, just like we said regarding Ephraim, Gideon doesn't want to delay the victory. So he says, I'll take care of this later. I don't have time for this right now. And then Penuel refuses. Right? So it's not just Sukkot refusing, but also Penuel. And here he has, as we said, a different punishment. He says, I'm going to knock down your fortress. So I have a few different answers here for why he says the fortress thing. And interestingly, it's the opposite of what Aurier thought, which is a logical thought. Aurier said, well, you know, it's worse to hit people personally than just knock down a building. Well, that's not the way that the commentators seem to view it, at least Ralbag. Three different takes on this. First of all, Mitsudata Vita number 5, and Abarbanel says this as well. He says, you know what, you knocked down the fortress. Lefisha Batchuli Hisagev the Migdal Oz Asher Hayalahem Lezamar Shin Tots Oso. He says, they thought they'd be safe in their strong fortress. In other words, the people of Penuel perhaps don't have a fortress. People of Sukkot do, and they're confident that this is going to protect them from him. So he says, ha, I'll show you. I'm going to knock down your fortress. That's one. Ralbag, though, says they're worse than the people in Sukkot. Because if you go back to the story, right, the people of Sukkot, we said, who was it who responded to Gideon? Sarei Sukkot, the officers of Sukkot. In Penuel, who was it who responded? Anshei, right? It's the people by Anshei Penuel. The people of Sukkot as a whole responded. So Ralbag says this is actually a worse punishment. Take a look at number 6. Vispoel mizeh hispalus rav leroat chunasam. He was really motivated by their wickedness. Actually, skimu lazor bezos hamelchama, such that they wouldn't help with the war. Afilu zeh ezer hameati, even in his minimal way. Since all of them were on board, Amar Lintotz Hamigdal, he said, I'm going to knock down your tower. However, in answer to your question about isn't one of them personal and the other one not, they're both personal. The Balaharog Yoshvav, he's also going to kill the residents.
It doesn't say that.
I didn't say that. So look at the rest of the line. Aval Kitzer Bidvarav and Imnami Lagalos Lahem Shear Game. He chose not to mention that. He's going to do it, but he chose not to mention that. He's knocked down your building.
Surprise. We'll keep it a surprise.
The Malbim has another twist on this in number 7. He says, wait, they got a fortress. Why are they afraid of Midian? He says, Kihim Einlam Terut Shirim Pnei Ha'oyev Achar Shabot Chim Migdalos. You've got a nice big fortress that you're so confident is going to protect you from me. Well, in that case, why are you afraid of Midian? So measure for measure, he's knocking down the fortress. Okay.
How is that different than Ralbag?
Oh, Ralbag is saying that he's just angry because they won't help, and sees that I'm knocking down your fortress as a I'm doing more to you than I did to them. Whereas Malbim says, no, it's measure for measure. They said that they were going to rely on this fortress, therefore he's going to knock down the fortress. Okay. So let's go back to the Psukim. Gideon, obviously good and mad at Sukkot and Penuel, but then he's still pursuing this battle, so he's going to come back to Sukkot and Penuel. We ain't done with them yet, that's for sure. So, Pasuk Yud. V'zemach v'tzalmuna b'karkor u'machnehem imam kachameshes asar elef kol ha'asarim mikol machaneh b'nei kedem. Zemach and tzalmuna are in this place called Karkor, but they're not alone. They've got like 15,000 people. All those remain from that big camp of all those warriors who had come in from the east. 15,000, which when you think about it is really remarkable, because, you know, Gideon only had 300 men. I mean, now he had all these other people who had joined in, but it's still remarkable. V'hanoflim, you want to know how many died? Me'av v'esrim elef, ish sholef charev, 120,000 men with swords. V'yal Gideon derech hashchunei ba'ohalim mikedem lenovach v'yog beha. So Gideon goes up towards them. Via this area that had tents, the Dot Mikra edition says tents from Bedouins. They were nomads. Ralbag explains why he went this way. He thought they might be hiding among the nomads, right? Think Sisera trying to hide in Yael's tent. So he suggests that he wants to see if they're hiding with the nomads, but also he wants to conceal his approach. So he takes this route up to find them, and Pasuk Yud sorry, no, in the middle still. He comes up east of to Nobach and Yob Baha. He strikes their camp when they think they are secure. Zevach and Salmuna flee. Goes after them. He captures the leaders and everybody else. He frightens. If you take a look at Ralbag that I brought you on the sheet, he says, why is it that they're so panicked? Shayu choshvim shehi achel Gidon rav me'asher itam ki laila haya. They thought that Gidon's forces were greater than theirs. It was nighttime. They couldn't see. They just knew they were under attack. It could be they did that stunt again with the sword for God and Gidon. It worked well the first time, so let's try it all over again. Okay, they also attack at night. It conceals their numbers. So Gidon routs them, and then you get Pasuk Yud Gimel. Vayashav Gidon ben Yoash min haMilchama milMale Hechores. So now Gidon comes back from the battle. Vayokod Narman Shesukos. He captures. By the way, milMale Hechores is an interesting term. Those are translations. How do they translate milMale Hechores?
From the ascent of Harris.
From the ascent of
Harris.
A place called Harris, in other words.
Yeah, with early, then they talk about Rashi. Before the sunset or after the sun rose.
Right. So Radak and Mitzudat Tzavid. Well, let me explain first. Harris is a term that's used a few times in Tanakh to refer to the sun. We find it in Sefer Iyov. We find it in if you remember when they buried Yehoshua, they bury him in Timnath Serach, which is also called Timnath Heres, and there's a suggestion that they put the sun on his tombstone because he stopped the sun. So Heres can mean the sun. And so the Dat Mikra says, Milamale Heres means the area of the sun, the east, in other words. Radak and Mitzudat David suggest it means before sunset. And Malbim and Malbim Abarbanel, also in Radak, say no, it was actually at sunrise. In other words, he pursued the enemy all night long, and then came back at dawn. Because at that point, he can't fight them anymore. You know why he can't fight the Midianites anymore?
I don't know how many there are.
Exactly. Malbim says it in number 9. Because it isn't just telling you what time it was, like it's an interesting detail. It's telling you what time it was, because it matters in the story. Once the sun rose, the game is over. So at that point, he returns and he says, okay, time to take care of Sukkot and Penuel.
But wouldn't you think if he turns around in the middle of a fight, they'll turn around as well and chase him?
Unless they're done too.
It doesn't really say that he finished them off.
Right. No, it does not say he finished them off. And historically, we know he didn't. But it's possible. First of all, keep in mind, he doesn't just have the 300. He has those others.
Right.
But it's also possible they had enough. Like, you know, they've really suffered. I mean, if you look at these numbers, they've suffered, you know, an absurd loss.
Right.
Yeah. So at that point, they're just like, you know, we'll do this again tomorrow. So let's see what happens with Sukkot and Penuel. Vayokod nar me'anshei Sukkos. He captures a youth from Sukkot. Notice the phrase, anshei Sukkot, right? Those are the ones who had answered him in the first place. So he captures a kid from anshei Sukkot, vayishaleihu, and he asks him, vayichtov elav, esarei Sukkos v'ez zikeinei ha'shivim v'shivai. She inquires of him and gets a list of the leaders of Sukkot. 77 men. And he comes to Sukkos. And he said, Hine zevach v'tzalmuna, shecher aftem osili, mu'akav zevach v'tzalmuna, ata biyodecha. He says, here are the two men that you said I had to capture in order to get your support. Zevach and tzalmuna, here. I got them right here. Kiniteima anoshecha hayifim lachem. You said we have to have them in our hands in order for you to give us bread? But now he doesn't want bread anymore. Vayikach ziknei ha'ir. He takes the elders of the city, ves kotzei hamidbar, and the thorns from the wilderness, ves habarkanim, and the thistles, vayoda bahem es anshei Sukkos. And vayoda the people of Sukkot. What does the word Vayoda mean?
Mardea.
That's alliteration as part of the root.
Mardea is something that you spur an animal with. Mardea is like it's a pointy tool that you use.
So, again, you can't get rid of the resh. So, Vayoda is usually taken, as Howie surmises, from Yud Dalid Ayin, to make something known. At least that's one way to look at it. There are multiple ways. We'll see Radak, Abarbanel, and Malbim, all three different approaches. Radak says on the sheet, it is number 10. You could read it the way it sounds. He informed them of their error, so to speak. The Vayoda, he made known to them what their mistake was. That's Radak. But the way Radak reads it is, he's punishing the leaders, and that way the nation finds out what they did wrong. That's Radak. Abarbanel also believes that he punishes the leaders, and he says Vayoda is like in Shmos, right? Our parsha, when Hashem sees what's going on with the Jews and decides to save them, Vayeda Elokim. So remember that Ladat has this connotation of intimacy to it. So he says, he only did it to the elders. Because they were the ones who answered him. Gidon asked for the bread from everybody, but the elders were the ones who had answered him. And that's why he punishes them. And that's what it means when it says he did this to Anshei Sukkos. Shukmo Vayeda Elokim Lashon Rachamim. It's mercy. Yeah, I don't think I adequately explained the problem here and what they're addressing. Part of it is obviously the word Vayoda, which is such an odd word. But the other problem is he asked for a list of elders, but then it says Vayoda Bahemes Anshei Sukkos. That he used these thorns to be, again, Vayoda, the people of Sukkot in general. So then, if that means you hit the people of Sukkot, then why did you ask for a list of the elders? It doesn't make any sense. So Radak's approach is to say he punishes the leaders and thereby informs the people as a whole of their sin. That's Vayoda. He informed the people when he hit the elders. The Abarbanel is saying no. He punishes the elders, and Vayoda for the people is he had mercy on the people. And then you get Malbim, who has this very interesting take. It's that he had the elders punish the people. That's the way Malbim reads it. He says, Ra'aki sarei sukos einam ra'uyim la'onesh. He has no problem with the elders of Sukkot, because the elders of Sukkot explained, we can't support your army. Number one, you haven't won anything yet, so therefore you're not a conquering army. And number two, because we're afraid to. But what about the request for tzedakah? Just food. The people of Sukkot, he had asked them for help just as tzedakah. His people are hungry. They should have the penalty. He used them to enforce the punishment. Yeah, the elders do this to the people of Sukkot. Yeah.
Isn't that a pretty severe... Like, they're your people.
Yes.
They're scared.
Yep.
They don't want to help.
Yep.
And I get, like, you don't want to help, you're scared, I get it. You don't want to give food, you don't want to give tzedakah. Lots of people don't want to give tzedakah for whatever reason.
Yep.
But now you're going to punish them so severely because they didn't give the tzedakah?
Yep.
Yeah, I was going to say.
You know,
you want to give?
It does work.
20 lashes. Like, what's the real message?
So I think you have to keep in mind the level of need that they were looking at and refusing to help. You know, you always have to look at who the recipient is and what they're going to do with the tzedakah you provide. These are people who are starving, and they've been fighting on behalf of the nation. And what's going to happen if they try to pursue this battle without your support? I mean, they made it. Hashem is helping them the whole way through. But you don't really want them to have to do this without support. So it's a pretty bad refusal. He also, certainly as Malbim reads it, seems to think that they could have gotten away with it. Meaning if Midian had come back to them later and said, "Why'd you help?" Their answer could have been, "We didn't give them military support, but we couldn't see our brethren starve." He feels that that would have been a winning argument. But if you think Sukkot gets a raw deal, take a look at what happens to Penuel. Remember we said, he promised them he's going to knock down the tower. Well, that's not what he does. Pasuk Yudayin, invest Migdal Penuel Nasatz. Yes, he knocks down the tower in Penuel. Vayaharog Yesanshei Ha'ir. And he also killed the inhabitants of the city. Ah, but that wasn't what you said you were going to do. So we already saw Ralbag. Right? Ralbag said he always meant to do it. He just didn't say that. Radak, Barbanel, and Mitzudat David, though, give a different answer. Number 13. It could be they didn't take the knocking down of the tower lying down. They fought him. And so he ends up killing them. But what this shows you is very, I think, lucidly, very clearly, that this is a nation in trouble. This isn't a functional Jewish people. Right? I don't know when we've been functional, but Shof the main it. First you have the people of Ephraim, right, who are ungrateful for what he has done and complain, "You didn't, you know, bring us where we would get the honor and the glory." And then you have the people of Penuel and Sukkot saying, "We don't want to help you. We don't want to help you militarily, and we don't want to give you tzedakah either." And Gidon, with his response, even though he had seemed like a good leader until now, right? He was very measured, very calm. He is absolutely reading them the riot act. I mean, it's not even reading anything. It's thrashing and killing.
But I have a question.
Yeah.
So if they were so hungry, 300 or whatever it is, where did they get the food to be able to come back and do all of this stuff?
So, right, my answer would be spoils. Meaning,
from Midian?
From Midian, the people who they were just, who had just, they killed in Midian. Right? I mean, all these people had canteens and whatever it is.
But they were on the run. They can't carry that much.
Right, 300 men. How much do you need when you kill thousands of people? Yeah, I would assume that that's what that's the basis for their survival.
So what was the need for him to ask in the first place? In other words, it makes sense about the spoils, but the spoils were already there. Why do we have this?
To which I would say, because you have no guarantee that you're going to win. He wants food in order to be able to prosecute the war. He's afraid they aren't going to be able to do it. You know, you don't rely on miraculous success. Here's a Jewish city. Let them give us some bread. The odds will be in our favor. Yeah, I'm thinking about the story in Shmuel where Shaul is fighting a war against the Plishtim. And Shaul takes an oath. Nobody should eat today. Right? Yonatan doesn't hear about the oath. He takes a little bit of honey. And then someone says to him, "You know, your father had this oath that no one's allowed to eat anything." And he says, "That's a terrible idea." He says, "My father has dirtied the land." He says, "Thanks to him, all you soldiers are exhausted. Imagine what you could do against the Plishtim if only you had some food in you." And the reader, looking at that story, thinks, "Yeah, you're right. Well, who thought this was a good idea?" You know, and there is discussion about, so why did Shaul do it? What was his motivation? But you don't want to be in a position of fasting when you go to war. Yeah, there is that line in the Mishnah Berurah when they talk about the question of why we fast, Hanas Esther. What is that meant to commemorate? The classic read of why we fast on Hanas Esther is not because of Esther's fast. Right? Esther's fast is a 3-day fast, number one. Number two, it occurs in the middle of Nisan. Not at this point. So why are we fasting? So the Mishnah Berurah quotes, it's not his own idea, that that this was actually because the Jews, when they went to war on the 13th of Adar, fasted, because Jewish armies did that. But you'll read that and you think, really? I mean, look, ultimately all victory is from Hashem, but that's not the way we're supposed to do things. So the so yes, the answer is that that he doesn't want them to have to fast, and he doesn't want to rely on winning and then getting spoils. We have a chance to pick up some support here on our way. Why shouldn't we do that? Okay. Interlude. Zevach and Tzalmuna meet their end. Pasuk Yudches. Vayomer el Zevach ve'el Tzalmuna. He says to Zevach and Tzalmuna, Efoha an Hashem asher haragtem b'Tavor. Where are those men you killed in Tavor? The Har Tavor, obviously, the mountain. Where are those men you killed in Tavor? Vayomru, and they said, Kamocha chemohem echad kisor b'nei ha-melech. Those men we killed look just like you, actually. They looked like one of the princes. Vayomar, and Gidon replied, Achai b'nei imihem. They are my maternal brothers. Chai Hashem, luhachi yisem osam lo harakti estam. You know, by God, if you had not killed them, if you would have kept them alive, I wouldn't kill you now. But Yomer li Yeser b'choro, he says to his firstborn son, Yeser, kum arogo son, go kill them. Velo shalach anar harbo, but the kid does not draw his sword. Ki arei, ki adenu nar, because he's a kid. Vayomer Zevach Tzalmunah, and Zevach Tzalmunah said, Kum ata ufka banu, you should strike us. Ki chaish giburaso, right? The might is like the man. You know, this kid, you know, even if he does, you know, lift the sword, this is going to take a while. Just execute us if you're going to do it. Vayakam Gidon vayarog Zevach Tzalmunah, he did it. Vayikacha sahasa haronim asher b'tzavarei gemaleihem, he took the ornaments that were around the necks of their camels. Okay, there's a lot that just happened. First of all, the opening two sentences there. Where are the men you killed in Tavor? Oh, they look like you. They're like one of the princes. Yeah, they're my maternal brothers. Had you kept them alive, I wouldn't be doing this to you now. What is this about? So this is where Davnikwa makes the comment that I mentioned a while back, where Professor Elitzur says that if you remember the beginning of the story, Gidon had summoned other forces to come from the north, and we never see them show up. So Professor Elitzur thinks they got killed by Midian. They tried to arrive from the north, Midian cut them off, or Midian's allies cut them off, and killed them. And that's why we only get help later on. Those are the stragglers. Those are the people who survived that battle in the north. So he says, I consider them my brothers, the people that you killed. That's one take. Malbim thinks that actually no, that Zevach and Tzalmunah, while they were fleeing, found Jews and killed them, and that included Gidon's actual relatives. That's the other way to take it.
But Gidon is from Shevet.
Gidon is from Menashe.
Right. And Tavor, I'm looking up here, is from Issachar.
Right. Tavor is in the north. So that lends support to Professor Elitzur's idea, but not definitive, certainly.
Yeah, his idea
is that the people Gidon had summoned initially were killed by the forces of Midian. So Gidon wants, yeah.
Doesn't he actually say that Gidon sent his relatives to go to Tavor, to go to the north to bring them? That
could be.
That it's his actual relatives that were killed in the process.
That is actual relatives. Where do you see it? Oh, Achpi Asher Shalachti Le'asov Sitzvah Sashvat Matzvonim. Yes. Yeah. Okay. So that's the first part of this. The other piece of it is this business about his firstborn son. Why does he want him to do that?
I'm a man.
Yeah. Like this is like, you know, his right of passage.
It's also more insulting.
Yeah.
To have the kid do it instead of visiting it.
Not my time. You don't get to die with honor. You get to die by the hand of a kid.
Interesting. So the simple read is Abarbanel in which one is it? In 14. Kadesha Anar Yadchil Gvuraso. Right? So that he'll start on his strength. Barigash Shnei Malachim. He's going to kill two kings. Shu Kavod Gadol V'Simen Tov La'asid. It's a good sign, you know, when you start your career that way. That's going to fit Abarbanel's view in general. When we get to the end of this parak, we're going to see the people offer Gidon position of authority. And Gidon is going to seem to decline. But Abarbanel is going to argue that Gidon wants his children to take over and to lead going forward. And we'll talk about that. There's a lot to say about that. But that fits with what's going on here. He's training his son. He sees his son as the heir. That's one approach. Malbim suggests that maybe the relatives of Gidon who were killed were actual brothers, and therefore his son is a Goel Adam. He is a redeemer. He is an avenger of the blood. But I think there's something else going on here, and this is a theme in Shoftim that I've never been able to fully develop. But it's so intriguing. It's too bad her father isn't here. He would really like this. Our story here began with a father and son, right? Who?
Gideon's father, the idol.
Right, Yoash. Right, Yoash saves Gideon, right, from the idolaters who are angry that Gideon destroyed the Mizbeach. Gideon is trying to do something, unclear what, with his son, who's not interested. In the next section, or not in the next one immediately, but down the line, we're going to see Yiftach, and Yiftach and his daughter. And Yiftach seems to kill his daughter. We'll have to discuss whether he actually does when he comes back from the battle, right? And then you get to Hatzlal Ponit and Shimshon, right? This woman who makes her son become a Nazir, so that he will fight and defeat the Plishtim for the Jews. And then the last of the Shoftim, Chana and Shmuel. Right? Shmuel is the last of the Shoftim. He's in a separate book, but he's a Shofate. So I just there's something going on here in terms of the dynamics of parents and kids, and I can't put my finger on what it is. There are too many different cases with different events taking place, but there's so much there, and it's going to lead into Sefer Shmuel as well. Meaning the dynamic of Shaul and Yonatan, the dynamic of David with, you know, pick your child, Adonio, Shalom, Shlomo, you know. There's so much going on about fathers and sons, but I don't know what I don't know how to define it. I just think there's something that's worth paying attention to. But his son declines. Right? And they say, you know, just you do it, Dad. Radak says that it's because, yeah, he's not strong enough and it's going to hurt. So we'd rather you just take care of it. Abarbanel says it's a matter of honor in number 16. Right? She'ein roi shemadu anarim cher begufat hamalachim. It's not right for them to you know, have their practice with the sword on the body of a king. You know, it should be. They should get killed by the general. That's the way it ought to happen. Okay. So he does that. He takes away the ornaments from the camels. Interesting word, by the way. I don't think I've seen anybody comment on this, but it seems fairly clear. The term for these ornaments that are on the necks of the camels is saharonim. In Aramaic, the word for moon is sihara. I also wanted to connect it at one point to Sahara for the Sahara Desert, but, you know, maybe like the shape of it, but I found the etymology for Sahara is different. It's not that. Okay. So that's our story here. We're not done. There's more yet to come, but what you're seeing here is Midian, and again, as we said when we started this whole thing, the separation of Jews from other Jews. Right, Ephraim with their ingratitude, and then Sukkot and Penuel with their refusal to help. And here I want to come back to Sukkot and Penuel. Their refusal to help granted that they have some justification in terms of military support, is an example, again, of Jews sticking with their non-Jewish neighbors, which has been a concern throughout Sefer Shoftim. That was Devorah's complaint about the Shvatim that didn't come to help as well. As opposed to Gidon, who sees that Midian flees east of the Yarden, he could legitimately have said, okay, we're done. Right? We did what we had to do. We routed them. But instead, as Rashi knows, he goes after them to protect the eastern Shvatim. And if I don't take that Mikra's idea that maybe Gidon sent his own brothers to go get the northern tribes, but instead I take it that it's the tribes themselves who were killed, then he views them as his brothers. Gidon is the opposite. Gidon is looking out for everybody. Strengthening that point, I come back to these locations. To what happened at Penuel and Sukkot. Penuel and Sukkot, again, are the places that bracket Yaakov's encounter with Esav. Right? When he said, we're going to go our own way. Penuel was first, after fighting with the Malach, right, or whatever that was in the middle of the night. Then he meets Esav, and then he has Sukkot. So in that story, Yaakov said, we're going to go our own way. Nisavan Elecha, right? We're going to travel our own way. We're not staying with Esav. And that's the lesson they did not absorb. They stayed with Esav, effectively. That's what I see there. In fact, what they did actually mirrors what Ammon and Moab did. Right? Ammon and Moab, when the Jews are coming from Egypt into Israel, and they ask for food from Ammon and Moab, and Ammon and Moab refuse to give them food, the punishment is they're not allowed to marry into the Jewish people. It's the ultimate separation. It's the ultimate division. They can't marry us because they did not support. They didn't provide help. So that's what should happen now to Sukkot and Penuel. And then I'll go one step further with it, because Penuel shows up one more time. Penuel shows up in Malachim Aleph, in Perek Yud Bet, as part of Yeravam's breakaway kingdom. When Yeravam splits the northern kingdom from the southern kingdom, one of the key sites for him is Penuel. Again, division among Jews. Okay. Which brings us to the last step of decline. Yeah.
Is there any importance to the decorations from the candles?
Yeah, it's coming. Okay. We're not going to get to it today. We'll get to it next time, God willing. But yes, the answer is absolutely. So, take a look at what happens here. Look at Pesukim Chavbet Chav Gimel. Vayomru Ish Yisrael El Gidon. The people say to Gidon, Mishol Banu Gamata, right? Like I said, they want him to lead. You also should lead us. Gam Bincha, and your son. Gam Ben Binecha, and your grandson. Right? They want to create a monarchy. That's what it looks like, at any rate. Ki Hoshatanu Miyad Midyan. You saved us from Midyan. You should rule over us. Vayomer aleihem Gidon, and Gidon says to them, Lo yimshol ani bachem, v'lo yimshol b'ni bachem, Hashem yimshol bachem. He says, that's not the way this works. I'm not ruling over you. My son isn't ruling over you. Let God rule over you. Except, and then we'll have to see the except next time. But first, take a look at Abarbanel, please, in source number 18. Number 17 was just about the Ammon and Moab not being allowed to marry in because they didn't help you. But take a look at number 18. Vayah minag b'shoftei Yisrael am shilam k'fig v'roseihem lo b'yerusha. A shofet, Abarbanel says, did not naturally pass along being a shofet to his children. You were a shofet if you had the power to be a shofet. Va'amru bincha uven bincha. They said, your son, your son's son, ima yoslo shivim banim. He has 70 sons. So what does that mean? Your son. Right? Which one? So the answer is, limros li yeser becharo. Presumably, it's Yeter, right? The firstborn. Kiselecha memshala b'ben agadol miyachav tamid. It always goes by the oldest, by default. So Abarbanel thinks that it was supposed to be Yasser, the firstborn, and now we go back to thinking about him wanting to, you know, to have Yasser kill the kings. It actually fits, you know. And then you could argue when he refuses to execute the other, you know, the Zebach and Salmunah, maybe that's a sign that he's unworthy, and maybe that's why Gidon says no. You can't know, but. At first, this seems like it's an offer that would benefit the nation, right? Gidon is a good candidate to lead, and this would actually be a good idea. However, based on Psukim we haven't seen yet, but we will, it seems more like it was a favor to Gidon. If you take a look at Pasuk Lamed Hey for a second, sentence 35, this is talking about after Gidon dies, and the people don't honor his children. So the pasuk says, "V'lo'asu chesed and base Yubal Gidon k'chala tovash rasam Yisrael." They did not do chesed to the house of Gidon in accordance with all the good that he had done for them. And there's going to be a similar line coming up in the middle of Perek Tet in chapter 9. So it seems like it wasn't about, "Hey, let's get a good leader." It was more like, "This is a reward since you saved us from Midian." So did Gidon refuse the throne? The simple read, and this is Mitzvah David's approach, is that yes, he refused it. Sorry, Rob, what did you say? No. The simple read is that he refused it, and that's why they don't take care of his family. And there's a medrash which I brought you in number 19 that supports it as well. That calls Gidon very humble. It says, "V'lifnei kavod anava." Before glory comes humility. Zeh Gidon Aviv. That's Gidon, the father of Avimelech. We'll talk about Avimelech. Shekshamrulo, Mishol Banu Gamata Gamincha Gamemincha, when they told him he should rule and so on, Amar Lam, Lo Amshali Bachem, he said, "Oh, I'm not going to." He was being humble. And that's the simple and straightforward read. And
he says, "Hashem, Mishol Banu," he doesn't just say, "I don't want."
Right, he also says, "God should rule over you," correct. And the Medrash says there that actually that's why Avimelech merits to become the king. Avimelech is a son of Gidon, although we had to talk about him. But Abarbanel disagrees. He says that's not what Gidon was saying. Gidon was saying that we are going to rule, but only in the name of Hashem. That's what Gidon is trying to say. And that is supported by the name of the next Shofet. Right? The name of the next Shofet, we've already said, is Avimelech. What does Avimelech mean?
Father was the king.
My father is the king. Right? Gidon names his son Avimelech. That's usually, that's the sort of name you give if you are the Melech. if you think you should be. Although I should note that Professor Elitzur is going to argue that Avimelech named himself that. It's not, we don't know what his birth name was. Mitzvah David also seems to say that. But this is going to be a theme in the next few Shoftim. There's an article that I use a lot of come in the Shoftim of Avimelech, Tola, Yair, the ones who are coming next, by Rabbi Yisrael Rosenson, in which he notes Gidon, whether he accepted power or not, did not pursue it. That's clear. He doesn't go looking for it. He didn't demand anything from the people. His son, Avimelech, we will find, pursues power and leads with violence. Tola learns from what happens with Avimelech and bounces back. He is a shofet, but he is a righteous shofet. And then after Tola is Yair, who we will find out is very wealthy and has a lot of status, and he gives his kids status, and it seems like a return to the Avimelech model. And then we're going to see Yiftach go that route as well, demanding authority, and it won't end well. In other words, what Rabbi Rosenson sees coming here is a major theme of the pursuit of power and how destructive it is. The ones who pursue power get into trouble. The ones who stay away from it do well.
Is it pursuit of power or the utilization of their power? In other words, during these, after now with Gidon, I think he had peace for many years.
Gidon is, right, Gidon, he says, does not pursue power, even if he gets it.
Right. But, I mean, I'm assuming the peace is due to Gidon.
Yes, he's credited with it, yeah.
Okay.
And Gidon is cool. Avimelech comes for power, and it's a terrible time.
Right. So it's the abuse of power rather than the pursuit of I'm just speaking in terms.
Well, in his view, pursuing it is a sign that you're not going to use it well. I think that's the way he looks at it.
But don't you need leadership? Sometimes you have to. Someone has to take that position.
So when we see the difference between a Tola and a Yair, this may make more sense. Yair is set up where he has a whole bunch of kids and he gives them all donkeys and he puts the he gives them cities to control, and like it's much more power oriented. It's not just accepting a leadership position. But we'll see. Well, we're going to talk about it as we go through it. I'm just giving you a heads up that it's coming. But the third decline is what's coming next, which we're going to have to do, I guess, next time. And that is the spoils that Gideon requests. And that's going to take us back to the Saharonim, the ornaments from the camels as well. So, God willing, we'll see that next week.
Shkaya.